You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. We get a chance to get a Chicago perspective on Russell Wilson. I feel like they would be excited out there. And joining us now is the co-host of Spiegel & Parkins on 670 The Score in Chicago. Joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, Danny Parkins is here. Danny, how are you, man?
Excited is an understatement, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you taking a few minutes. And you tell that Spiegel guy just to keep that big yapper shut, all right? I worked with him at Sporting News Radio, and he just won't stop talking. So you just send that message for me.
Yeah, no, trust me. Many people have tried. None have succeeded. It's a daily battle.
Nah, he's a good dude. I love Matt. Love Matt. But give me the vibe out there in Chicago, because as I was telling Mike, I lived out there for a little over 5 years, so I'm very well versed on the lack of success at the quarterback spot in the history of that organization. I mean, you go back to Sid Luckman and a couple of years of Jim McMahon, and you went to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman, but they just haven't had the guy. And Trubisky clearly doesn't seem to be the guy. So I guess the idea that Russell Wilson listed Chicago as one of the teams that he would be willing to go to should a trade take place would get everybody out there pretty fired up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the understatement of the century. I don't think many Bears fans believe that it's possible. I think Bears fans feel like they're probably being used as leverage, and they're just being teased and toyed with, frankly. But, you know, it goes even further than that. The Bears have never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards in a season. They're the only franchise in the NFL that can have that dubious distinction. They've never had a quarterback throw for 30 touchdowns in a season. Their all-time passing rating leader at quarterback is Mitch Trubisky, who the rest of the NFL considers a bust. He has the best career passer rating in the history of the franchise. So Russell Wilson on day one would be the best quarterback in the history of this city. And within 4 years, he would hold every passing record in Bears franchise history. So if they actually got Russell Wilson, this city would throw a parade just for the acquisition, much less the Super Bowl.
Well, and then, Danny, would that make up for the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky? Would they forgive the Bears organization for not getting, I guess it was what, Watson and Mahomes were both available when you moved up to get Trubisky, is that right?
Yeah, thanks. My goldfish died when I was 8, too, if you want to bring that up. Talk about that. That was fun. Would they forgive and forget? No, but I think they would be excited. I mean, it's the worst draft blunder in Bears franchise history, but Chicago was on the receiving end of that when Portland took Sam Bowie in front of a guy named Michael Jordan. So, like, we know how that goes. But what I would say is it would go a long way to extending the job security of Ryan Pace, who made that decision, and certainly their head coach, Matt Nagy. So would they forgive and forget? No. I think we'll be talking about that one for generations as Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson both continue first ballot Hall of Fame trajectory. But it would go a long way towards easing the pain, if you will.
Well, I can imagine, Danny, because we got Rashad Penny in the late part of the draft in 2018 and didn't take Nick Chubb, who went in the second round, and fans have never stopped complaining about that one. But
for good reason.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that is not the same.
That's not even probably close. So, yeah, I'm going to tell everybody that you should be in Chicago. But the other day, though, I saw on Colin Cowherd, Dave Wannstedt came out in defense of Mitch Trubisky. He sounded like he's in his camp. Are there some holdouts that are still supporting Mitch Trubisky?
Listen, I love Dave Wannstedt. I would consider him a friend, certainly a colleague. He's on the show every week during football season. He called in today. You have to understand, Dave Wannstedt is a guy who the best quarterback he ever had was probably Jay Fiedler. Like, Sage Rosenfels. Like, Dave Wannstedt wouldn't know good quarterback play if it hit him in the face. And I love Dave, and I would say that to his face over a bottle of red wine. Like, he was the guy who gave Ricky Williams 400-plus carries and thought that he didn't use him enough. Like, he's the guy who brought LeSean McCoy to Pitt And then when his quarterback threw an interception in the first game, told his offensive coordinator not to throw again the rest of the season. Like, that's a true story. So Dave Wannstedt likes running the ball and playing defense. And so, sure, he will defend Mitch Trubisky. But trust me, that's irrelevant. Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
I apologize for turning the table here. But what's going on? Like, you guys have a first-ballot Hall of Fame quarterback who's a Super Bowl champion, and your head coach would rather give the ball to Chris Carson? Like, this makes no sense. Like, mend the fences, put a Band-Aid on, kiss and make up, and keep Russell Wilson happy. How did you guys let it, not you, but how did you guys overall as the Seahawks organization, how did they let it get to this point?
I think that's a good question, but it sort of came out of nowhere because Russ, for 9 years, the reason it's such a big story here is because for 9 years, Russ has conditioned everybody to expect cliches, vanilla statements, go Hawks, Mr. Positivity, everything's great. Never says a negative word about anything or anybody. So when he comes out, and he didn't do it, it wasn't a big dramatic statement. It was, hey, man, I've been hit 400 times. That's not good. We got to be better. We got to do better. People were like, whoa, where did that come from? And then it built, and I think his agent is behind this whole thing. And now people are saying, you know, you got half the crowd saying, hey, he's right. The O-line has been problematic here almost the entire time he's been here. And you got others saying, oh, he's being a diva. Sierra's gotten to him. She's Yoko Ono. She's going to break up the Beatles and the whole thing. So to answer your question, I think it's a bit of all of that. And I think it gets worked out personally. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe I'll be wrong and he gets traded. But there are $39 million out there in dead cap money that say, yeah, probably certainly not going to happen this year unless they just get blown out of the water with some crazy trade from the Bears or somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, after June 1st, obviously, it gets a lot more palatable financially. Man, I'd fire Pete Carroll yesterday if Russell Wilson asked me to. Like, you guys have one of the true rare commodities in the NFL. I think he's the third best quarterback in the league. I think it would be absolutely organizational malpractice to let him go. But I apologize. I've hijacked the interview.
No, I mean, it's interesting because, look, they just extended Pete through 2025. So they clearly, ownership believes in Pete. And this is really the first time that we've heard from this. I'll say this. His agent is a piece of work, definitely. And so he puts a lot of things out there. We heard that he hired some kind of a consulting firm for his image. He's been talking a lot about legacy lately. But, man, I love the kid. He has been nothing but a winner here, and it's been really strange watching this happen and watching it play out. Because the thing is, he holds the kind of sway where he can go in and call a meeting with Pete Carroll and John Schneider. And, you know, and I guess he didn't like the answers, but yeah, this is like
Russell Wilson is much better at his job than Pete Carroll is at his. Mm. So if for some reason that marriage ended in divorce, like, yeah, and I was the kid, I would choose to live with Russell Wilson.
You go with Russ.
Like,
Russ
that,
has
that
got
is
a
not
sweet
even
crib.
Close.
Yeah, he does.
Sweet crib, and he's a quarterback. And again, Pete Carroll wants to. It's just so dumb. Like, he wants to run the football and like ball control and like, yeah, cool. It's not 1997 anymore. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like, this is an NFL where there's 5,000 yard passers and Pat Mahomes and wide open offenses and all of that. Like, I'm not saying that there's no place for running the ball in the NFL, but if every quarterback was available to be drafted tomorrow, like every quarterback was a free agent, and you were just trying to win a Super Bowl next year, and there was a draft, what do you think? He's the third pick, right? After Mahomes and Rodgers, he goes, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe fourth, Deshaun Watson, maybe fifth if you're crazy and you take Josh Allen. Like, he's a top five quarterback by any measure if you're trying to win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years. So just parting with him would be insane to me.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we've kind of said as far as, like, Rodgers, we're leaving those names out. If you're going to replace Russ, if you take anybody for Russell Wilson, there's two names for me anyway. It's Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes, and that's it because of age and things like that. I'll say this, the running game and Pete wanting to run the ball and him being a caveman is a little overplayed. I mean, he does want to run the ball, but he wants to take deep shots. What they had going on in the first half of the season was really good. And Pete dialed it back a little bit, and everybody made a big deal about that, kind of blew the whole thing up. But, you know, he had 7 turnovers in like 2 games, and it's just something that Pete Carroll hates. But, you know, and I just wanted to ask you what your perception of is of Pete Carroll, because he's, you know, here he all of a sudden has become old and stodgy when, like, I know he's the oldest coach in the NFL, but he's also the guy that chews his gum the fastest and runs out on the field and plays catch. And he's, you know, with the young guys, he's a very young, older coach and like maybe one of the most progressive older coaches. And now it seems that all of a sudden he's been personified as this old man, this old caveman that's stuck in his ways. Is that the perception?
I agree with you that is probably overstating it a bit, but my perception of Pete Carroll overreacting to 7 interceptions in 2 games, like that his conclusion is more Chris Carson, is just dumb. Like that is a dumb thought. Point blank, pure and simple. Like, sure, no one likes interception. That doesn't make Pete Carroll unique. My guess is Russell Wilson wasn't like, whew, I crushed it today with those 4 turnovers, which was your favorite. Like, that's not how it works. So I just think that the idea that you have a Maserati or a Rolls Royce or a Ferrari, whatever your car of choice is, at quarterback, and you know what, you're like, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to drive around the parking lot of a nursing home with it. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like let Russell Wilson, you got DK Metcalf, you got Tyler Lockett, you've got one of the most mobile quarterbacks with the best deep ball accuracy in the NFL. I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, he had, 13 interceptions last year, and he's never missed a start?
Yeah.
Like, Pete Carroll talks about him like he's a turnover machine, or like he's so risky that he puts the ball out there. I'm like, I don't see that. Like, Russell Wilson takes shots, connects on them, doesn't get hurt, is the consummate professional, and doesn't turn the ball over. Like, that's a guy that I want to build around. And by the way, like, the legacy stuff, people like read into that being diva-ish or whatever. Like, he wants to play into his 40s and he wants to chase Tom Brady and Drew Brees. That sounds like a good thing to me, not a bad thing.
Danny Parkins from 670 The Score out there in Chicago is our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. So let's just go ahead and assume this trade doesn't happen, because I don't think he's being traded. But
yeah.
What is Chicago going to do? I mean, is in terms of the quarterback position, because it seems like everybody's out on Mitchell Trubisky, obviously, except for Dave Wanstead. So what happens with that spot? I mean, is it, you know, Nick Foles was there, but obviously that didn't work out. The injury took place and people questioning his toughness, all that. So is there somebody, is it Tyler Bray? Is it somebody we're not thinking of? Is there where they're drafting? Is there a quarterback that seems a likely target? What happens with that spot?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. What I will say is they are absolutely turning over every stone. Like, last year, it was very quiet, but it came out after the fact that they were one of the 3 finalists on Tom Brady. They didn't get him. They've been calling Russell Wilson or the Seahawks pretty incessantly. That came out today from Mike Garofolo, that they've just been like kind of badgering John Snyder about, like, is he available? Is he available? Is he available? So, like, they're taking big swings. They did not make a formal offer on Carson Wentz. I know that they would be very interested in Derek Carr if he became available. I believe they would be interested in Dak Prescott if he'd be available. Matt Nagy went on the record with Mike Silver at NFL.com and the NFL Network and said that he believes that they're a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender, and he referenced Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Now, I would disagree, and I think many people would disagree with that, but that is how Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy sold George McCaskey and the McCaskey family to come back this year, even though Matt Nagy's never had a losing season, 2 500 seasons in a 12-win year. It's the failure of Mitch Trubisky is the stench on this current regime. Matt Nagy was supposed to coach him up. Ryan Pace, as we discussed, took him ahead of Mahomes and Watson. So they need to upgrade the quarterback position significantly this offseason, and they need to win in 2021. Unfortunately for them, I think I agree with you that Russell Wilson won't be traded. And if he isn't traded, Dak Prescott's probably not traded. And then if those guys aren't available, I can't see why Derek Carr would be traded. And then, like, Jimmy Garoppolo isn't enough of an upgrade over Nick Foles, that my guess is the Bears maybe trade up a little bit in the first round and end up with like Mac Jones from Alabama as the fifth quarterback off the board, which is about as uninspiring as it gets.
Yeah. So you're already prepared to be disappointed. I love it.
Listen, man, I was conceived during the Super Bowl in 1985. I've literally never seen a good quarterback for the Chicago Bears or a Super Bowl. So, yes, I am prepared for disappointment.
Hey, Danny, I want to ask you about a guy I don't know if you guys even remember or even talk about, but a guy named Brandon Staley, who was the outside linebacker coach there in 2017, yeah, was his first year. And then, you know, he a couple of years later comes out here to the Rams, gets hired as the defensive coordinator. They're number one in pretty much every category, and he brought Leonard Floyd out with him. Did he come off as much of a genius as he must be? Because, I mean, in 4 years, he's a basically five seasons, he's a head coach after being in the NFL just four seasons prior to that.
Yeah, so Brandon Staley, I mean, obviously it's there's a little bit of the one that got away. There's no question about that, but you know, Vic Fangio was here, and the Bears' defense in 2018 was the best defense in the NFL by far. Had 36 takeaways. They acquired Khalil Mack. They were absolutely dominant. And so it wasn't like it was the type of thing like, oh, no, Brandon Staley isn't here. And then Vic Fangio ends up being a head coach, right? So with the Broncos. So it's not like they were lacking for talent on the defensive coaching staff. Jay Rogers, the defensive line coach, ends up following out there and is now a defensive coordinator. And so the Bears have had a lot of defensive player talent, and good players make good coaches. And so there's no question that the Bears have had some great talent in their building that has gotten away. Brandon Staley, probably the most notable name on the coaching staff, and Chris Ballard, who has the Indianapolis Colts, probably a top five roster outside of quarterback in the NFL. He was with the Bears organization for 10 years, and they went with Ryan Pace instead. So, you know, that didn't work out so hot. So the Bears definitely have, you know, some what could have been syndrome, not only at quarterback, but at coach and general manager as well.
Hey, Danny, let me ask you, let me switch to baseball for a moment. I'm sure you guys have talked about the whole Kevin Mather situation out here and you know, player manipulation or you know, the story behind Jared Kelnick, because it's obviously very familiar out there with Chris Bryant. That was a big story out there. Is that something you guys have touched on out there? And just give me your perception from out there as to what this Mariners situation looks like.
Yeah, we definitely talked about it. We played the audio on the show. You know, I was surprised that he resigned before he was fired, frankly, was my perception. And I was thrilled. Like, I'm a pretty pro player guy. I don't go to the games. I don't tune in to, you know, celebrate billionaires, frankly. And so I think that everybody knows that the rules get manipulated against the player in favor of teams and ownership. And so Kevin Mather is a dummy, and he got very comfortable at a Rotary Club event. I don't know if he had a couple of scotches in his system or what, but he thought that he was among totally like-minded people where he could make fun of a Japanese pitcher who they paid $46 million to, and he could be cheap over a $75,000 interpreter, or make fun of a top Spanish-speaking prospect who has been speaking English in interviews going back to 2018, and that, like, that was cool. So just on that level, it was offensive to my sensibilities just as a decent human being. But then on a sports level, I was glad that it was finally on the record, because the Cubs, as you mentioned with Chris Bryant, and basically every team that has done the service time manipulation, they're like, they need to work on their defense, or the base running from first to third needs refining in the minors. But then as soon as that service time clock passes, the date passes, and you can get 7 years of big league control instead of six, voila. The base running and the defense have all of a sudden been solved, and the player loses out on a year of their earning potential in their prime, and the team gets an extra year. I don't begrudge the teams from taking advantage of the rule. I do kind of hate lying. And so I was happy that Kevin Mathers put his foot in his mouth, got himself fired or resigned, however you want to put it. And hopefully with the next round of collective bargaining, that rule gets stricken, because frankly, I don't think it's good for the teams either. Like, it's dumb. Why would you want your best prospects to not break camp with your team when you're trying to win? Like this,
right.
This should be a rule that is changed on everybody's side. And if Kevin Mathers has to be the sacrificial lamb for that, then so be it.
What, remind me, what was Chris Bryant looking like as a minor leaguer back then? Because I think a decent case has been made by Jerry.
He was hitting like 650, and he was the minor league. He was the minor league player.
650.
So, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think a decent case was made by Jerry in saying, hey, this kid's played 21 games above the single A level. And in those 21 games, he hit 253. He's got a 315 on base percentage. It's not as if he was hitting 650 and lighting up every pitcher he faced. So as much as I think there certainly is manipulation of their service time, I get that. But he can make a strong case that, tell me what he's doing down there that says you are going to win the second this guy is on the big league roster. He's the difference.
Yeah, but they said on the record that they were manipulating service time. They didn't say like he was down there because of the performance. And then that argument would hold plenty of water if he didn't come up until August. Mm-hmm. But my guess is that he was going to come up like April 25th. And I don't know anything about the Mariners minor league organization, so maybe right. that wrong. But I just historically with these great players, it has been very coincidental of exactly when they get called up. And it just normally is within 24 hours of the deadline where they can get that extra year of control.
Right. Hey, Danny, we really appreciate it, man.
It's just a terrible rule. It's just a terrible rule.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I hope anyway that it gets changed.
Hey, we appreciate you taking the time. Thanks so much, man. And tell Matt I said hello.
Yeah, I will do that. And I don't know if you guys know it yet, but you've got a superstar as a producer in Mike Lefko. So be sure you use him and lean on him. He's the goods.
That's how we got Danny on.
Okay,
gotcha.
I see how it is. All right. Yeah, he's so far so good. We're still reserving judgment, but he seems like a decent enough guy. So, yeah.
Nice guy.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I'm reserving judgment on you guys, but I can tell you that Lefko's the goods.
We appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
There you go. There's Danny Parkins of Spiegel and Parkins, the afternoon drive show on 670 The Score out there in Chicago. So there you go.
It's interesting to hear from, you know, national of like what they think. I mean, and he was throwing out Chris Carson's name like he's garbage. Like, you giving the ball to Chris Carson?
Yeah, well, I think he's just comparing who he believes Russell to be, one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL and a Hall of Famer, to a running back. But yeah, I get it. All right, our thanks to him. Coming up, speaking of the Mariners, we were talking Mariners with him, and we heard from Jerry DePoto this morning. He was on with Danny and Gallant. Also, a little bit from James Paxton in response to all of this. You'll hear it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. We talked a little Mariners. It was pretty much all Seahawks and Russell Wilson with Danny Parkins from 670 The Score, but they could relate out there to what's going on baseball-wise with a very highly touted prospect, which is what Chris Bryant was before he was called up to the Cubs. And I think they even had billboards going on out there. I mean, there was a big deal out there about them manipulating his service time. Like, he was ready to come up, and excuse me, and they were doing the same thing, keeping him down in the minor leagues to manipulate the time. Now you got the Kelnick situation. Difference is, you had an executive with the Mariners that was foolish enough to say it publicly, as he just talked about. Like, this just confirms that dark secret that everybody knew about, that like we talked about yesterday, that you could point to all these different prospects and different organizations and go, why is this guy not up? Or why is that guy? And everybody goes, they're trying to buy that extra year. They're trying to get 7 years of control rather than six, and they're trying to manipulate. But nobody ever said it. You couldn't prove it. You could just identify and say, well, come on, obviously that's what's going on. But it was never officially out there until you heard Mather say it.
Right. So he basically said there was, I'm paraphrasing, but he was basically saying there was just no way we were going to put him out there.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why you saw players go, thank you, Josh Donaldson. Thank you so much for saying it. Thank you. And I mean this. Thank you.
It's just weird to me, though, because everybody knew that it was going on. Did you really need that guy to say it. I guess the way he put it, it's almost like it's a few different words, like kind of.
Yeah, I guess it's just confirmation.
So that
he just confirmed that is happening. We all know it's happening, but we only know it because we're seeing it. It's not in print, or we don't have audio of it happening. He gave us the hard copy, if you will.
Yeah, because if it was Jerry DePoto, he wouldn't have said any of that.
No.
It would have been, we are trying to do the best for Jared Kelenic, and we think that this, that, and the other, the 20,
which
21
is what he's
appearances.
Saying now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have loved to have been sitting in a room with Jerry DePoto when he heard about this? And when he actually heard the comments, I could just picture him going, what are you doing?
I'm going to kill him.
What are you doing? Like, I could just see him getting on the phone with what's going on here? I could just see panic and just, you got to be kidding me. He said that. And then once he heard it, just, all right, this is where damage control comes in. This is where we have to fix it. This is how we're going to do it. And he was on with, Jerry DePoto was on today with Danny and Gallant. Said a little bit of what you just said about Kelenic, that they are just fully developing Kelenic.
We will develop Jared fully before we put him in a big league uniform, and we don't feel like we've achieved that yet for a variety of reasons. We are not manipulating his service time. We are doing our best to develop him fully. And, you know, we are truthful with our players, and we have been very transparent through the course of development with each of them, and we have been with Jared, and I'm confident that we're doing the right thing for both him and the Mariners, although sometimes, you know, and he has this right, not all players are going to agree with what you're doing. And, you know, I'm sorry that he sees it through that lens, but that's not how we see it at all.
So he's saying what he should say now. Now, whether that's 100% true or not, because, again, we had Bob Nightingale on yesterday, who wrote the story in USA Today about his conversation, his interview with Jared Kelenic, who he and his rep both said, no, they told me, they offered me this deal, said, if I sign it, I am up with a big club. And we had some people texting and saying, no, he would just be on the 40-man roster, but it would be a minor league assignment. I'm like, no, Jared Kelenic said in the article, I know for a fact I could have helped this club last year. They were two games out at the time, I could have helped them. He wasn't talking about just being on the 40-man roster. He was talking about being up at this level, at the big league level playing. And he was told, according to him and his agent, on multiple occasions that he would be up with the big club. So on that level, if that's true, I understand why he's upset. But I look at Jerry's side when he's saying, hey, you know, the kids had 21 games above single A. And then when you go look at the numbers, I tend to go on his side and go, well, yeah, the numbers don't tell me he's busting down the door. He's ready to go. 253, 315 on base. In 21 games, that's not lighting the world on fire. And then that's not commentary on his skill or anything, or he may be a superstar. All I'm saying is what he did in that small amount of time doesn't sit there and go, well, how do you not call this guy up?
But if it's true, it's evidence that not only Jerry did tell him that, but also he was willing to sacrifice his development to get him for a cheaper price.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what it says. You nailed it right there.
I mean, that's the part of it that is, you know, the he said, she said. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and put my trust in what Jerry says. I don't know much about Jared Kelenic. You know, he seems like a pretty, you know, maybe his agent is telling him to say things, because I think we have some of that going on right now in town, of agents telling their clients to say things that I don't think they should be saying. So, you know, maybe that's what happened there. But, yeah, the whole thing is really, I just got to believe that Jerry DePoto is just incredibly frustrated. Because I believe that, look, they want the best out of these guys. Yes, of course. Everybody, it's kind of funny that if somebody came out, like if Mather had said, you know, we're trying to pay these players the least amount we possibly can. You know, would everybody, oh, my God. And of course, that's the way it is.
Yeah. You want to get them. They want the most they can possibly get.
Yeah.
You want to get them for the least you can possibly pay.
I was going to say another news flash. The players want as much as they possibly can get.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if somebody comes out and says that, does that all of a sudden make it nefarious? You know, it's this horrible, they're trying to keep the players down. Well, they're trying to pay them the less. I mean, that's just what you do. So, it's just interesting that the whole thing came out this way. And just because one guy said, hey, there was no way we're going to let him out on the field because of the service clause, it's like, that's kind of what's been known. But
it was
now
the dirty secret. was the dirty secret. And more importantly, the, you know, them trying to pay as little and players wanting as much as possible. Everybody knows that. And that's not circumventing rules. This is this is blowing trust. Yeah. This is you're not looking out for my best or the team's best interest. You are potentially keeping a difference maker down in the minor leagues because you want that extra year of control. You don't want to give that up. So it's not about putting the best product on the field, and you're sort of circumventing the spirit of this whole thing. So there's a level of dishonesty to that. So that I get. One more cut here. This is from James Paxton, who was part of that conversation, and he talked about Kevin Mather when he was talking about Taiwan Walker and James Paxton, sort of poo-pooing their expectations, right? That I think he said he had talked to the agent of Paxton, and Paxton made 12.5 the year before, and the agent thought he'd get somewhere in that neighborhood. And
wasn't there something about hat in his hand?
Well, yeah, and then that Taiwan Walker was going to want a multi-year deal. I don't think either one of them are getting what they want. We'll wait, and they'll come in hat in hand, implying they're going to be begging for whatever they're going to give them. Right. And James Paxton said, yeah, I took that kind of personally.
Yeah, you know, that is frustrating. And I think that he didn't necessarily have his facts straight. You know, I did have other offers, and I did have more lucrative offers. But I decided to come here anyway because this is where I wanted to be.
I can understand why that would be frustrating, because he kind of wanted to make the point, look, I took a little bit less money to come here because I like it here. And he puts it as hat in hand.
Yeah, like, I'm begging you, please give me a contract. Please sign me because nobody wants me, and I'll just take whatever you're offering.
Well, and it reminds me of what a good dude Paxton is. We haven't talked to him a number of times. I'm sure you've gone in there and talked to him. Just a good, nice guy, the Big Maple.
He really is a good dude. Yep. He's always very mellow. He's not an excitable guy. He's not a guy that shows a lot of emotion on the mound by any stretch. You know, he's very just kind of even-keeled. Can't really tell if he's winning or losing out there. Is he pitching well or is he not? Because the expression on his face won't tell you.
This is ridiculous. I can't remember exactly what this is about, but what was it about the eagle that attacked him or landed on his shoulder or something like that?
Oh, it was like swooping down, and he was just kind of ducking and moving, and he just seemed kind of nonplussed by the whole thing.
Yeah, it was like the national anthem or something.
Yeah.
And he didn't react like, get this thing off of me.
No, he's just...
And
his head like it's an everyday occurrence. Like, I'll just move over here. I'm fine. All right. Coming up, could a fix on the offensive line be the thing that soothes everything with the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We were just watching that James Paxton video during the break. His calm, cool demeanor is unmatched. And as I was pointing out to Dave, his feet never moved. He bent from the waist. He was bobbing and weaving like he was in a boxing match. But his feet, he didn't take a step forward, back, left or right. He just stood there like, what's this thing on my shoulder? The thing landed on his back. He just kind of sat there, and then it went down on the ground, and he just turned around and looked at it like, It was during a national anthem. He had his
expression never changed the whole time. I was trying to remember what it was about that stood out to me so much. Yeah, I remember the eagle landed on him, and I remember we asked him about it and everything. But, yeah, I've never seen – because that thing had some big old talons.
Yeah, and he was so mellow. He had his hat off and had it over his heart. It was during the national anthem. He kind of bent down and stood back up and kept the hat over his heart, and then the bird flew onto his back. His demeanor never changed. It's remarkable.
Yeah, the guy does not get rattled easily. That's for sure.
Love it. So, yeah, if you want to go down the YouTube rabbit hole, as we were just talking about, and end up in some cooking video later or something, go look up the James Paxton video with the eagle landing on him. Meanwhile, is there alignment if Lindsley is signed, or Lindy as John Clayton likes to call him.
Lindley.
If he's signed, does that squash a lot of this? And I don't know if they're going to be able to afford him. He's 29 years old, 28 years old. He's the highest rated free agent center, according to Pro Football Focus. He's 29 years old, just coming off a 3-year, $25.5 million deal with the Packers, ranked as the best free agent center, according to Pro Football Focus. No penalties, one sack allowed.
How about that? Well, and that's the thing, you know, if you look at some of these other teams, like Aaron Rodgers gets sacked like 12, 13 times a year.
Yeah,
Ben Roethlisberger, the same thing. They're just different kind of quarterbacks. They're getting rid of the ball. But, I mean, it does speak to the fact that you can have an offense where you're able to get rid of the ball. You know, and I don't think it has to do with Russ's height. So, you know, again, I'll just really quick, I did a football 101 where I had two plays that looked pretty similar. And one was the Seahawks and one was the Rams. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with motion, fly sweep, action, and then just getting a guy out on the edge for an easy throw for the quarterback. So getting off topic a little bit here, but, I mean, I think the reason why those guys are not getting sacked is, yeah, they're getting rid of the ball because they're immobile. Right. But also they're in offenses where the ball comes out fast. And mm-hmm. I think the Seahawks can have that. Corey Linsley, to me, I mean, he's really the only guy. I think that center, if you're going to spend any money on the free agent market, center is where you would want to spend it. I mean, I see there's
it's
a
not
couple
close,
of guards.
Right? I mean, I'm with you. I think it's not even a debate as to whether, all right, should we invest in a guard? You have to get a guard. Yeah. Obviously, you have an opening. But if you're talking about where do we spend the bulk of our money or where's the biggest focus, it's got to be on your center.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's some really good guards out here. And down the list here, I mean, you see the best one was making, what, $15 million last year, mm-hmm. which is Brandon Scherff. But, I mean, I'm looking at Corey Linsley as, you know, a guy that maybe you can get for $8, $9, $10 million. He's your connection to Russell Wilson. You know, the line calls, everything that a center does to help out a quarterback. This guy is it. And, again, I think this guy's been a center from, you know, the time that he was in college.
He's got the PhD.
He does have the PhD. So, I mean,
age-wise, he could be your guy for years to come if you want to commit to him. I mean, he's not a 35-year-old for now guy.
Right. Well, and the other center on this list, Alex Mack, is 35 years old and probably got another couple, 3 years in him. I mean, I was looking him up. He's only missed, I think, 12 games. 13. So out of 192 possible starts, Alex Mack has had 179. So 10 of his 12 seasons, he's played all 16. So, yeah, maybe Corey Linsley has another 5-6 years like Alex Mack, you know, and gets to that point where he's 35 years old and still playing. But I just, to me, that was the guy that I originally, when we talked about free agents and who I would like to get, that was the guy that stood out to me was Corey Linsley. The fact that he's a free agent, I just, the last time they had a center like that here was Max Unger.
Max Unger. Yeah. It seems a crucial position. And listen, if you want to keep Posick on the roster as depth, a guy who could play center, obviously he's done it. He could play guard. We've seen him do that. Is just that utility guy. Great. I just don't, it feels like you need to step that spot up. And that's with all due respect to him. And he did, the line as a whole had a great first half of the season, but things just fell apart. And then you talked about what he was being asked to do. Maybe Posick functions decidedly better with Waldron there.
The new offense, yeah.
You know, maybe they, the way they managed Whitworth and his lack of mobility, maybe they work on his weaknesses and, all right, we're not going to put him in these positions. We're going to put him only in these positions where he truly, his physicality can excel, or what he does well will excel in this kind of call or this kind of, you know, offense, I guess. But maybe you'd just rather have a guy you don't have to manage that, hey, you put Linsley out there, he's going to do whatever you want him to do, and he's going to do it well.
Well, and the other thing, too, is Posick can play guard as well.
Yeah.
So you can always slide him over for Mike Iupati, retired. I really like Jamarco Jones. I know they like Jordan Simmons. Who am I missing?
Jamarco Jones, you said.
Yeah.
Jordan Simmons.
I like.
Oboihe.
Yeah, Cedric Oboihe. So, you know, hopefully they'll have good depth. And maybe, you know, the other thing that could happen is, look, maybe
Ethan. Phil Haynes.
Phil Haynes, that's
the forgetting
one
about him. I have no idea what to even expect.
Well, remember he played in the playoff game his rookie year in Green Bay.
And, not really.
Yeah,
I don't even remember him out there. But
I think it was, and he might have played in the Philly game too. And I'm talking about the 2019 season. That postseason, I think he played in one or both of those games. So, and he turned out he was okay. He was pretty good. So didn't get much of a chance to develop this year.
Was he a fourth rounder?
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
But, yeah, we keep forgetting him just because he just hasn't really been part of the equation.
Yeah, was he from the 18 draft? Possibly? Yeah,
I'm going to look it up.
But, anyway, yeah, I think the other thing I was going to say, let's say they don't end up getting Corey Linsley, you know, maybe Ethan Posick takes another step forward, you know, takes a step the next year. And, you know, given, because he really did respond well. They brought in B.J. Finney as a center, and he took that job over at the beginning of camp and never looked back.
Yep. Pete said as much.
Yeah.
That was his comment, essentially, that, yeah, he got out there and made it his. Phil Haynes, by the way, fourth-round pick in 2019. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so he was a true rookie playing out there and did okay. Did okay. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if you were able to have the luxury of getting this. And then, you know, what Russell's talking about, I mean, if he, everything all calms down and we all like Russell again and we're okay with him complaining or whatever, they got him Corey Linsley, you know, as a Pro Bowl type of center. Yeah, that'd be a nice.
I think that, A, benefits your team, obviously, but, B, it puts Russell in a position where he can't be unhappy. Right?
Yeah.
At least not outwardly, not publicly. You'd be like, wait a minute, we just went out and got you the best free agent center on the market and spent X amount of dollars to do it. So not only is there more stability with your line, you've upgraded the spot substantially. What else do you want?
And then you say, and we got you an offensive coordinator that you got to help.
Exactly right.
Pick, so shut up.
The end.
Okay, yeah.
The end.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. We love Russ still. I mean, look, I think a lot of this is his agent. I don't know. It's a calculated move. Why play it out in the media? I know a lot of people are angry at Russ right now, but I think everything will be okay.
It is interesting just to see the texts and tweets about people. Get him out of here. Get him out of here. And just, again, it was not long ago you were reluctant to even point out that that wasn't a good pass, or that was a bad decision, because people would just immediately get on the keyboard. Why do you hate him? What do you expect him to be perfect all the time? What's wrong? It's like, whoa, we're just talking about that one play. It's okay. We still love him. We still love him, but that wasn't a great throw. That's all. It happens. But now it's get him out of here. He's a diva, and he's a Yoko Ono and Sierra, blah, blah. I mean, just all the stuff coming out now is crazy. I couldn't imagine ever reading any of that stuff. Now it's pretty prominent.
Yeah, well, we're also seeing text that he's too short again.
Yeah, so. That's right. He got shorter, or the height thing became a really big issue all of a sudden. All right, we're going to talk more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.